All right, so are you ready for another deep dive? Today we are exploring a lecture series on the Gospel of Luke, and specifically Session 10. And this one focuses on a pretty wild story, the story of Jesus and the sinful woman in Luke chapter 7, verses 36 through 50. Now, this story comes right after Jesus has just laid down the law, with some really harsh words for the Pharisees and the lawyers about their judgment. And then almost like a total 180, he accepts a dinner invitation from a Pharisee. I mean, talk about a plot twist. His name is Simon.
It really is. There's a like huge paradox there, and I think that's one of the things that makes this story so fascinating. It seems simple on the surface, but when you start digging in, there's all these different layers of meaning.
Okay, so before we really get into the details, can you set the scene for us a little? Who are the main characters here and what's going on socially?
Yeah, so we're in first century Palestine. And in this culture, social hierarchy was everything. So at the top, you have the Pharisees, they're the religious elite, the guardians of the law, and they're all about outward piety, ritual purity, knowing the scriptures inside and out.
And then this woman enters the picture.
Yeah, exactly. This woman who's only identified as a sinner, and back then that term carried a lot of weight. It meant she was known for breaking social and religious norms, someone who lived on the fringes of society.
Okay, but then this is where it really starts to get good. She crashes this dinner party hosted by Simon the Pharisee, and the things she does, I mean, I think even today people would be pretty shocked, but back then.
Absolutely. It's totally over the top. I mean, she washes Jesus's feet with her tears, dries them with her hair, kisses them, and then anoints them with this really expensive perfume. And this is in a society where women, especially those labeled as sinners, they were expected to be silent and invisible. So she's doing all of this very publicly, this huge display of emotion and devotion.
It's like she's throwing out the rule book. I mean, just completely disregarding social customs. I can't imagine the judgment. So how does Simon react to all of this? He must have been mortified.
He's like, if Jesus were really a prophet, he would know who this woman is and wouldn't let her touch him. So he's judging both the woman and Jesus. Revealing his own prejudices. And it was interesting, if you notice how Luke, the gospel writer, he specifically mentions Simon's identity as a Pharisee like four times in this passage.
Yeah.
I mean, he really emphasizes that.
Yeah, it's like he's saying, hey, pay attention to this. Look who's doing the judging here. It's like he's emphasizing Simon's religious standing to show the difference between Simon's judgment and Jesus's acceptance. It almost feels like Luke is holding up a mirror to the reader and asking, which side are you on? So this isn't just the story about a woman who's, expressing her love for Jesus. There's this deeper clash of worldviews.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right on. And, if you look closely at the language Luke uses, he describes the woman's actions as driven by love. It's her deep gratitude for being forgiven that motivates her, that brings her to do this extravagant, unconventional display.
And that's where Simon, the Pharisee, that's where he kind of misses the point. He thinks he's entitled to forgiveness because of his social status, because he follows all the religious rules. But he doesn't seem to understand, or maybe he doesn't want to understand the profound gratitude that comes from actually experiencing that forgiveness, personally. It's like he sees it as a transaction, not a transformation.
I think that's a really good observation, yeah. So you have this what seems like a simple story about a dinner party, and then this unexpected guest comes in, and it turns into this profound reflection on forgiveness and gratitude and really how we respond to those who are different from us, right? It raises questions about what it means to be righteous, truly righteous in God's eyes.
There's so much packed into this one story. Makes you think twice about, all of our assumptions about, what's pious and what's judgmental.
Yeah, totally. And one of the things that's fascinating is to look at how the other gospels handle this same story. You find similar accounts in Matthew, Mark, and John, but they all have some interesting differences.
Oh, really? What kind of differences?
Well, for example, in Matthew and Mark, the host is identified as Simon the leper, not Simon the Pharisee.
So wait, is that like a whole different event? Or did they just kind of get the details mixed up as they were retelling the story? It makes you think about how those oral traditions were passed down and how they shape our understanding.
Yeah, exactly. It's a complicated question. How do we interpret these things? And then there's the question of who the woman actually is.
Right. Because John, in his gospel, he names her as Mary. And some scholars even say she's Mary Magdalene, the same Mary as there at the resurrection.
Right. But in Luke's gospel, she's unnamed. And I think that's a crucial detail because
because it makes it so much more relatable. It's like she could be any of us, right? Anyone who's ever felt like an outsider or messed up or like they don't deserve forgiveness. By not giving her name, Luke makes it easier for us to see ourselves in her story.
Precisely. Yeah. For Luke, this isn't just about one specific woman and her meeting with Jesus. It's about his radical message of acceptance and forgiveness for everyone, especially those that society rejects.
Makes you think about those times when maybe you felt judged or excluded. You know, are we more like Simon, quick to judge based on how things look? Or are we more willing to extend grace and compassion like Jesus does?
It's a huge question to think about. And that's really at the heart of the story. It's not just about this historical event. It's like a mirror. It's reflecting back to us our own attitudes and actions.
And what's even more fascinating is that we see this willingness of Jesus to engage with the Pharisees, the very people who opposed him. He criticizes them publicly, and yet he still accepts Simon's inner invitation.
Right. It shows just how open he is to dialogue and connection, even with people who disagree with him. It's a pretty incredible example of building bridges and reaching across those divides, yeah. Something I think we need a lot more of today.
Absolutely. So we see this story isn't just about forgiveness. It's about challenging social norms, engaging in dialogue with people, people we might consider different from us. It's about seeing the humanity in everyone, regardless of their past or what they believe.
Yeah, that's it. And there's even more to unpack here. I mean, one thing that stands out in Luke's account is how he focuses on the woman's tears. He's the only gospel writer who mentions that detail.
It's not just a passing mention. It's like she's using her tears to wash his feet. It's such a powerful image. You know, it's not exactly the typical way you'd wash someone's feet. So there's got to be some deeper meaning there.
Exactly. Yeah. Because in that culture, usually, you know, water was used for washing feet. So for her to use her tears, I mean, this says so much about her emotional state, right? It's like she's pouring out her heart, all of her pain, her regret, and using it to, like, cleanse Jesus's feet. It's an incredibly intimate and symbolic gesture.
Yeah, it's like she's saying, look, I have nothing else to offer you except my brokenness, my tears, my vulnerability. And she's doing it in front of everyone, even the people who are judging her.
And, you know, this is a society where women, especially women labeled as sinners, they were expected to be quiet and subservient. So for her to express her emotions so openly, so boldly, would have been incredibly shocking and unsettling to everyone there.
You know, the lecturer actually compared this to what it would be like if a woman did this to him at Gordon College with his students.
He did. He asks his students to imagine being at a party, and then this woman, someone with a, you know, questionable reputation, comes in and starts washing his feet with her tears and drying them with her hair.
I bet their jaws dropped. That's such a great way to help them understand just how radical her actions were, you know, in the cultural context of this whole story.
Yeah, it really brings the story to life, doesn't it? You realize how unexpected, how transgressive this whole thing would have been in that time.
It really shows her courage and the depth of her love for Jesus. She's not holding back at all.
Absolutely. And all of this is happening right in front of these, you know, very proper, very religious Pharisees. It's this like head-on collision between two different cultures. It challenges their whole idea of purity and righteousness.
And it doesn't stop there. Luke tells us that she also kisses Jesus's feet.
Yeah, I can see why the Pharisees were scandalized. But what's the significance of that? I mean, what does a kiss mean in this context?
Well, in that culture, kissing someone's feet was a sign of deep respect, even worship. It's something you might do for like a revered teacher or a king. So in a way, she's acknowledging Jesus as her Lord, as her savior through this act. And she's doing it in the most public, unexpected way possible. It's like a huge statement of her faith, of her devotion.
Exactly. Yeah. And it contrasts sharply with the Pharisees' judgment and their self-righteousness. Luke's really using those contrasts to drive his point home.
So we've got the tears, the hair, the kiss. Is there anything else unique? Any other details that Luke includes in his version?
Oh, yeah. One key difference is that Luke's the only gospel writer who tells us about the specific type of perfume she uses. He says she brought an alabaster flask of ointment.
An alabaster flask. Okay, so what's the big deal about that?
Well, alabaster was a super expensive material. And the ointment inside, that would have been a precious, fragrant oil. This wasn't like your everyday perfume. This was the good stuff, a total luxury item, probably something she treasured.
So she's pouring out her most valuable possession on Jesus's feet. It's so extravagant. What would make someone do something like that?
I know, right? It really makes you think. I mean, think about what she's risking here. She's already facing judgment, condemnation from these Pharisees, And yet she keeps pushing the boundaries, defying all the social norms. She's pouring out her love for Jesus in this really lavish way.
It's like she's saying, nothing is too good for Jesus. I want to give him everything, even if it means being ridiculed or rejected. It makes you wonder about how we express our own gratitude and devotion, right?
Right.
Do we hold back or do we, you know, give freely, extravagantly, without worrying what people will think?
Yeah, it's a big question. And the lecturer, he suggests that maybe her actions are coming from the fact that she's already been forgiven by Jesus at some point earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He points out that maybe she even experienced firsthand Jesus's power to forgive. And now she's overflowing with this gratitude. And that's what's driving her to do this extravagant, unconventional thing.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. It's not just about seeking forgiveness. It's about the joy, the love that come afterward, after receiving it. Recognizing just how big the gift is. And responding in a way that shows you really get it makes her actions even more incredible.
Exactly. Yeah. Her actions are like a testament to the power of forgiveness. She's a living example of what it means to be touched by grace and then to respond with like this reckless abandon. But, you know, there's another layer to this story. The lecture also talks about the parable that Jesus tells in response to Simon's criticism. It's really clever how he uses that to expose Simon's misunderstanding of forgiveness and gratitude.
Oh, yeah, the parable of the two debtors. Can you remind us how that goes again?
Yeah, so Jesus asks Simon to imagine this moneylender who has two people who owe him money. One owes a huge amount, the other owes a much smaller amount, but neither of them can pay him back. So he's like, okay, I'm just going to cancel both debts.
And then he asks Simon, which one would love the moneylender more?
Right, it's such a great setup. Always a good way to teach a lesson. Yeah. It is. And of course, Simon's like, well, the one who was forgiven the larger amount would feel more love and gratitude.
Which is exactly what Jesus is going for. The woman has been forgiving so much. That's why she loves so much. Such a, I don't know, such a simple but profound illustration.
It is. Yeah. And what he's saying is that Simon, who thinks he's more righteous than this woman, he might not actually be experiencing that same depth of gratitude because he doesn't understand how much he needs forgiveness.
Wow. Talk about a reality check. Makes me think about, you know, my own relationship with forgiveness. Do I take it for granted? Do I really understand, you know, what it means to be forgiven and the gratitude that should come from that?
Yeah, it's a powerful question. That's one of the things that's so amazing about this story. It challenges us to look inside ourselves, to examine our own hearts. It's not just about like watching what happens in the story. It's about how the story reflects on our own experiences and beliefs.
I love these deep dives. It's amazing how much you can learn from just one story in the Bible when you really take the time to break it down.
It really is. And, you know, we haven't even gotten to the part where Jesus actually speaks to the woman directly and tells her that her sins are forgiven.
Oh, right. And I bet that's where things really heat up with the Pharisees.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But we'll save that for our next part of the deep dive.
All right, so we're back and ready to kind of pick up where we left off. Last time we were talking about, you know, this incredible display of love and devotion that this woman shows and how it really upset the Pharisees at that dinner party. And you mentioned that things get even more intense when Jesus actually says, you know, that she's forgiven. So I'm ready to hear what happens next.
Yeah, it's a big moment in the story. Picture this, right? You have this room and everyone's on edge. There's this tension. Simon the Pharisee, he's fuming inside. The other Pharisees are like looking at each other and whispering. And then Jesus turns to the woman and says, your sins are forgiven.
Oh, man. Yeah, you can feel the whole mood shift. Like, I bet you could hear a pin drop after he said that. So how do the Pharisees react? They must have lost it.
Oh, they were furious. I mean, they were outraged. You can practically hear them thinking, who does this guy think he is? Only God can forgive sins.
It's almost like Luke is doing this on purpose, using the scene to show that Jesus is claiming divine authority. It's a direct challenge to the whole power structure of the Pharisees. And remember, this is all happening after Jesus has already been criticized for hanging out with, you know, the sinners and tax collectors. So by publicly forgiving this woman, he's not just challenging their authority. He's like doubling down on his message of grace and acceptance.
Exactly. And that clash between Jesus's message and what the Pharisees believed, that's so important to understand Luke's gospel. Luke wants us to see that Jesus came to shake things up, to offer a whole new way of understanding God and our relationship with him. It's like a revolution, but not just outward stuff. It's a revolution of the heart.
It makes me think about how easy it is to get caught up in like legalism and judgment, even today, you know? We can focus so much on how things look on the outside and following all the rules that we totally miss what faith is really about. love, compassion, and forgiveness.
It's a constant struggle for sure. Yeah. But going back to the Pharisees, their reaction to Jesus forgiving the woman, it makes you wonder why they were so bothered by it. Was it just about power? Or was there something more fundamental going on?
I mean, it seems like they were really threatened by the idea that Jesus could just, like, forgive someone without, you know, any rituals or sacrifices or anything.
Right. And the lecture talks about this. For the Pharisees, forgiveness was all about repentance and atonement. Forgiveness through good deeds, rituals, sacrifices. It was this whole transactional system, like a cosmic balance sheet.
So they thought this woman hadn't done any of the work to earn forgiveness. And for Jesus to just declare her sins forgiven, that was like breaking all the rules. They couldn't handle that. It went against their whole system of belief.
Exactly. It totally went against how they thought God operated, how forgiveness was supposed to be given. The idea of grace being given freely without any strings attached, that was inconceivable to them.
It's amazing how this story, it seems so simple, but then it gets into these really deep theological concepts that shows this huge difference between the Pharisees, who are all about the law, and Jesus, who's bringing this revolutionary message of grace. It's like two completely different operating systems.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that tension between law and grace, it's something we still wrestle with today. Like, how do you balance justice with mercy? How do we hold ourselves accountable while also extending compassion and forgiveness?
Tough questions. And yeah, it's easy to get lost in all the, you know, complexities. But in this story, Jesus doesn't seem interested in having a theological debate. So after he says she's forgiven, does he address the Pharisees or does he just like move on?
He doesn't get into an argument with them at this point. Nope. Instead, he turns back to the woman and says, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace."
I love that. It's such a powerful moment, you know. It's like he's saying, "Look, I'm not here to argue with these guys. I'm here to offer you love and acceptance, a fresh start." He doesn't let their negativity ruin this moment of grace.
Exactly. And when he says your faith has saved you, he's highlighting how important faith is for receiving forgiveness and experiencing salvation. It's not about earning it through good works. It's about trusting in his grace and letting that change you.
It reminds me of that saying, it's not about being good enough to earn God's love. It's about recognizing that we're loved by God no matter what. You know, that kind of unconditional love, it's so freeing. And it really challenges that whole legalistic mindset that the Pharisees represent.
You're right. It goes against everything they stood for. Mm-hmm. And it's a message that people from all different backgrounds, all different faiths, they connect with that. It speaks to this deep need that we all have to be accepted, to belong, to know that we're loved even though we mess up, even though we're not perfect.
Yeah, it's a universal need. And this story shows us that Jesus meets us right where we are, you know, with open arms, with compassion. So if this woman represents like those who are looking for forgiveness and acceptance, who does Simon represent? I mean, Simon the Pharisee.
Well, the lecture suggests that Simon and the Pharisees in general, they represent those who are so focused on outward piety and rules that they miss the heart of what faith is really about.
It's like they're so busy judging everyone else and trying to earn their way to heaven that they completely miss the gift of grace that Jesus offers. They're stuck in this like performance-based spirituality.
You got it. Yeah, they're trapped in this cycle of legalism and self-righteousness, blinded by their own sense of superiority. They can't understand the radical love and forgiveness that Jesus embodies because it doesn't fit into their worldview.
It's a good warning for us, isn't it? I mean, it makes you think about how easy it is to fall into that same trap of judging others and thinking we're better than them. We can get so caught up in our traditions and doctrines and practices that we forget about what really matters, loving God and loving people. It's all noise and no substance.
Yeah, that's a good point. The story, it's not just some ancient tale. It's like a mirror reflecting the human condition, right?
Yeah.
We all have that tendency to judge, to exclude, to focus on what's on the outside instead of what's in someone's heart. And that can be especially strong in religious circles where, you know, everyone's trying to fit in to follow all the rules.
It's true. We build these walls around ourselves, excluding anyone who doesn't fit our idea of what's good or righteous.
Yeah.
And we miss out on the beauty of diversity, the way God intended it.
It's sad, isn't it?
Mm.
But getting back to the lecture, what does the lecturer say is the takeaway from this story for us today?
Yeah.
What's the main point he wants people to remember?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it's one thing to understand the story, the historical context, but how does it apply to our lives now? How do we connect the dots between the ancient world and today?
Well, the lecturer really emphasizes that this story is a call to do some serious self-reflection. He wants us to ask ourselves, are we more like Simon, the judgmental Pharisee, or like the woman who's humble and repentant and so grateful for God's grace?
That's a tough question to ask ourselves. It forces us to face our own biases, you know, our own judgmental tendencies. It's easy to look at the Pharisees and say, well, at least I'm not like that. But really, we all have our blind spots. We all struggle with pride and prejudice.
So true. And that's why this story is so important for us to think about. It's not about condemning others. It's about holding up a mirror to ourselves and asking those hard questions. Where am I messing up? How can I be more gracious to others, especially people who are different from me? How can I show the same kind of love and forgiveness that Jesus showed?
Big questions, and sometimes they're really hard to answer.
They are. It takes guts to be honest with yourself, but it's so worth it. When we accept the grace that Jesus offers, it opens up this whole new life of freedom and joy.
Yeah.
We become agents of healing and reconciliation, and the world needs that so badly.
It's a beautiful thought, and I'm really interested to hear more about how we can actually, you know, apply this message to our lives.
Me too. But before we go there, the lecturer brings up another interesting point about how Luke tells this story. He points out that the woman is never given a name.
Ah, I see what you're getting at. It's not just about this one specific woman, right? It's about all of us. We can all see ourselves in her story, no matter our background, our beliefs, our past mistakes.
Exactly. By not giving her a name, Luke makes her experience universal. She becomes a symbol of humanity's need for grace.
I love that. Makes the story so much more powerful. It's not just something that happened to someone else. It's like an invitation for us to step into her shoes, to feel her humility, her desperation, her gratitude, and then ultimately her freedom through Jesus's forgiveness.
Yeah, exactly. And when we enter into her story, we experience the power of his love and forgiveness in a much deeper way. It reminds us that no matter who we are, where we've been, what we've done, we can always find acceptance and a fresh start in him.
So this story, it's not just about a woman being forgiven. It's about the hugeness of God's grace and how it can redeem even the most broken parts of ourselves. It's a message of hope for everyone, even if they feel completely lost.
You said it perfectly. It's a message that's just as powerful and relevant today as it was back then. It speaks to that deep part of us that wants to be loved, accepted, and made whole.
I'm so glad we did this deep dive. It's really helped me to see the story, which I thought I knew, with fresh eyes. And to appreciate what it means for me personally. It's not just a story. It's like a mirror reflecting back our own hearts, our struggles, our need for grace.
I feel the same way.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much we can discover when we take the time to really slow down, ask questions, and listen. It's like peeling back the layers of an onion, you know. There's always more to see.
I'm totally with you there. So before we move on to the last part of our deep dive, what about you? What really stood out to you about the lecturer's take on this passage? What resonated with you?
That's a good question. I think for me, the most striking thing was how the lecturer emphasized the tension between Jesus's message of radical grace and the Pharisees' rigid legalism. It really highlights how revolutionary Jesus's ministry was. You know, he was challenging the whole religious system. He wasn't afraid to disrupt things and call people to a higher standard of love.
Yeah, I agree. And that tension isn't just ancient history. It's still happening today. We see it in the way people use religion to judge and exclude others, to justify prejudice and discrimination.
Absolutely. And that's what makes this story so relevant for us today. It makes us think about our own beliefs, about forgiveness, grace, acceptance. It asks us those hard questions. Am I holding on to legalism and judgment? Or am I embracing the radical love that Jesus offers? Am I part of the problem or am I part of the solution?
Those are the tough questions.
Yeah, they are. And it takes a lot of courage to really face them. But it's so worth it. When we choose to embrace the grace that Jesus offers, it opens us up to a life of freedom and joy and purpose. We become instruments of healing and reconciliation, and the world needs that now more than ever.
I love that. I'm excited to hear more about how we can actually put this message into practice in our lives. All right. So here we are for the final part of our deep dive into this amazing story of Jesus and the sinful woman. It's been quite the journey so far.
It has been. We've covered a lot of ground already. The clash of worldviews, the radical nature of Jesus' forgiveness, the symbolism of the woman's actions, and then that challenge to look inward, to examine our own hearts.
Yeah, for sure. So as we wrap up, what's the lasting message? What does the lecturer leave his listeners with? I'm really curious to hear how he brings it all together, you know? How does all this translate into practical stuff for our lives?
Yeah, good question. So the lecturer, he ends by really driving home Luke's central message in this story. He reminds us that Jesus came for everyone, but especially for those who are pushed to the edges of society, you know, the ones who feel overlooked or judged. It's like this powerful reminder that God's love doesn't discriminate.
It makes me think about how Jesus was constantly breaking those social norms and expectations. He reached out to those who were considered untouchable, the outcasts. He wasn't afraid to get his hands dirty, you know, dealing with the messy realities of human brokenness. And he offered healing and hope to those who needed it most.
Absolutely. And the lecturer uses this phrase that I think really sums it up. He says that Jesus came to preach good news to the poor, to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, and to set the oppressed free. It's this message of liberation and restoration that speaks to people across cultures and throughout history.
It's beautiful and powerful imagery. It makes you think, how can we be part of that mission today? You know, how can we be those instruments of grace and love in a world that can be pretty dark and hopeless sometimes? How can we be the hands and feet of Jesus and bring that healing and hope?
Those are the questions. I think the story gives us some answers. The lecturer talks about how some people might feel stuck in their past mistakes, burdened by guilt and shame. He uses the example of this woman, you know, known for her sin, to show how universal that experience is.
It's so easy to get trapped in that cycle of self-condemnation, right? You keep replaying your failures in your head, and they just define you and keep you from experiencing the fullness of God's love and forgiveness. Like, we build these prisons for ourselves.
Yeah, I get it. It's something a lot of people struggle with, and I appreciate how the lecturer doesn't shy away from that. He speaks directly to those listeners who might be wrestling with their past, and he offers this message of hope, of encouragement. He reminds them that just like Jesus extended forgiveness and a fresh start to this woman, he's ready and willing to do the same for anyone who comes to him with humility and a repentant heart.
It's that reminder that no matter how far we've strayed, how badly we've messed up, God's love and forgiveness are always there for us. It's never too late to turn back, to seek reconciliation, to experience that grace that breaks the chains of the past.
It really resonates with me. And it's a message the world needs to hear.
Yeah.
You know, one that can tear down walls of division and heal those broken hearts.
Yeah.
But the lecturer also points out that, you know, there will always be people who judge, just like the Pharisees judged the woman. They'll criticize our choices, question our motives, even try to shame us into conforming.
That can be so hard, especially when it comes from people in our own faith communities. It's easy to feel isolated and misunderstood when you experience that kind of judgment, especially when you're trying to live out your faith in an authentic way.
Yeah, I get it. It can be incredibly painful. But the lecture encourages us to remember that Jesus himself was constantly criticized and rejected by the religious leaders of his day. He was friends with the outcasts, the sinners, the tax collectors. He healed the sick. He challenged the status quo. No wonder he upset people and faced opposition, right?
He didn't fit into their neat little boxes, and he didn't play by their rules. He was a total revolutionary. And what the lecturer is saying is that if we're going to follow in Jesus's footsteps, we might face some of that same resistance.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of comes in the territory. But the good news is we're not alone in this journey. We have Jesus' example to follow and the Holy Spirit empowering us to live with courage and compassion.
That's such a crucial point. It's easy to lose heart when you face opposition or judgment, but we have to remember we're part of something way bigger than ourselves, God's story of redemption. And our faithfulness, even when it's hard, it can have a ripple effect we may never fully understand.
Love that. It's like our actions, even the small ones, they become part of this bigger tapestry of grace and transformation. We might not see the whole picture, but we can trust that God is weaving it all together for good.
So to bring it all back to the story of Jesus and the sinful woman, it's not just an ancient story or some theological concept. It's a call to action. It's an invitation to embrace the power of grace, to live out Jesus's love, to show acceptance and compassion in a world that needs it so badly.
You said it. And the lecturer leaves us with this.
Such a beautiful image. It makes you think about how we express our gratitude for God's love and forgiveness. It's not just about words. It's about what we do, how we live our lives, how we treat others, how we use our time, our talents to make a difference.
Yeah. It's about taking the love and grace we've received and letting it flow through us. And it doesn't have to be some big splashy display. It can be just a kind word, a listening ear, a helping hand, just being willing to step out of our comfort zones and show grace to someone who needs it.
This story reminds us that each of us has something precious to offer, even with all our imperfections. We all have our own alabaster flask, so to speak, filled with our unique gifts, talents, and experiences. And when we offer those to Jesus, he can use them in powerful ways.
It's beautiful, isn't it? Redemption and transformation. So as we finish this deep dive, I hope everyone listening will take some time to think about that question. What perfume are you pouring out? How are you showing your gratitude for that incredible gift of forgiveness and the new life we have in Jesus?
And remember, it's not about being perfect or trying to earn God's favor. It's about being real, coming to him with a humble heart and letting him use us however he wants. Thank you for joining us on this journey through the story of Jesus and the sinful woman. Until next time, keep seeking, keep exploring, and keep diving deep.